Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
And welcome to an hour of Mind Power. Well, Father's Day is coming up, and it's a big celebration on so many different levels. But we have a very interesting guest today. Louis Epstein, and he likes being called Lou, has put together a fascinating book about fatherhood, More Coaching for Fatherhood, Teaching Men New Life Roles. And this is a book he published in 1996. I want to welcome you to the show, Lou. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
It's good to be here.
Now, Lou, I was intrigued with the fact that this book was written originally in 1996, and the one I hold in my hand is revised. But you have been a psychotherapist and family therapist for a lot of years, and you have a master's degree in social work, and you've done all kinds of certifications. Why did you, as a man, feel that this message had to be conveyed in 1996, and how did the revision come about?
Well, you know, when I started becoming aware, actually in my own fatherhood, you know, when I thought about, I have two daughters, and I became aware that I was carrying some of the issues that my father also carried, which mm-hmm. was anger, and something I vowed I would never do with my own children. And then when I was playing with them, and they were quite young, I found myself getting irritated and frustrated and angry in ways that he did. And I felt like, as a psychotherapist, I had to understand this better. And there was nothing really out there that was the research, or there was very little going on about fatherhood, a lot about motherhood, mm-hmm. but very little about fathers. And I decided to do my own research and to look back at my own family history and to try to understand what it was about the men in my family and the fathers that transmitted this anger over the generations. So that was my original impetus for writing it in 96.
Well, here we are so many years later, and you decided to revise it, bring it up to date because of variables that have evolved since 1996. Why was that important to you?
It was important to me because I think something had changed in the 10 years. I was approached by my publisher, and she also thought that there were things that I hadn't included in the first edition that might be included. One was about fathers and divorce, although there's a long history with that. There was no chapter in the original book about fathers, their relationship to their children post-divorce. Mm-hmm. There was also something about long-distance fathering that I hadn't done, about fathers in the Army, in the mm-hmm. armed forces, and fathers who were working overseas. And I think there was also something about fathers in prison, which was fascinating to me because it highlighted what was missing in the fatherhood debate, which was fathers were often considered fathers if they were in the household and very often around being the breadwinner. And here was a situation where fathers were out of the home, mm-hmm. in prison, and it helped to redefine fatherhood as fathers wherever you are fathers. And it also helped the prisoners, the incarcerated men, to have a stronger identity. So those were some of the things that had changed. Also, there's a new chapter in the newest edition, which is about gay fatherhood, because a lot of gay men are adopting children, mm-hmm. and there's some interesting, I wouldn't say research, but information on that fathering that's going on between gay men.
I really, when I saw this book, I thought, when you go back, and I was just watching a program on this, in mm-hmm. fact, yesterday, about how the stereotypical images of fatherhood, let's say back in the 50s, in the 60s, it was the Leave It to Beaver and the Donna Reed family and Ozzie and Harriet and all this kind of stuff. And, of course, later on, the real information came out about 20 years later, how this wasn't an idyllic world and so on and so forth. But that created a fabrication of a belief system about the roles of fathers. And here we are coming up to Father's Day, and Father's Day is a very significant event. And the role of the male in society, let's address that a little bit, because there have been many persons that have felt that they are totally lost, that they really, as men, do not have the drawn paradigms as maybe it was with their fathers or their grandfathers, because society has changed so much. How would you address that?
Well, I think that it's not only that society has changed so much, it's that it hasn't changed that much from going back all the way to, I would say, the American Revolution, about the 1700s, when the main economy was around the home or the small farm or the small guild or family business. And fathers at that point were home, and they were even part of the birth process. Now, what changed after the Industrial Revolution, which came about probably in the 1820s and 30s, was that men, fathers, started commuting away from the small family farm and the home, and I think they became the second parent at that time. The women then became primary, men became secondary. They were no longer in the hub of the household. I think that's been the big change in historically. And it's only come back into focus with men realizing that they need to be more than just a breadwinner or a paycheck. That's only started happening, I think, in the 1980s, probably, with this revival of a men's movement that took that into account. So I think that we're coming back into focus about the importance of fatherhood and skipped a couple of hundred years.
Well, I think fatherhood is extremely important. I think that a good balance in a family is having a good, solid female influence and a good, solid male influence. And there's no such thing as perfection. But I really, really think that in certain particular ethnic groups, that positioning has become so demeaned that a lot of the young men don't even have good adult examples. Is there any particular group that you have noticed this more strongly present with than others?
Well, I know that there's a class issue as well as an ethnic issue. I know that poorer families have had trouble. If men lose their jobs, if men are out of work, there's a tremendous blow to their self-esteem. And since they don't, they see themselves as the instrumental ones, I think that they have a hard time maintaining a healthy identity when they're out of work or when they lose their job. And yes, I think in the African American families, there's been a terrible blow to men's esteem around the very high unemployment historically. But then again, if we add to that, that men are only valued for their economic worth and their paycheck, then what happens when a man loses his job? He's no longer important. And women know that they're important because they're the hub of family life. They interconnect the generations, and they take care of the children. And that's why even in the prison population, which has a high proportion of African Americans and Latino men, we're trying to reconnect men as fathers to their children, even while they're in prison, so that when they get out of prison, they no longer just associate themselves as the money man or the man that has to pay the check.
It has been something, as a counselor myself, dealing with a lot of single parents over the years, that when a male child does not have a good father image, and you mention rites of passage in your book. It's a fascinating phenomenon. Girls go through a particular patterning when they enter puberty. Boys need a rite of passage, and when they don't have it, it's as if it takes them maybe until they're 40 or 50 years of age to finally grow up, and sometimes that doesn't even happen. What is it about the male psyche that really needs to have that good male standard that is, that holds, you might say, their mental, physical, emotional, and spiritual feet to the fire so that they finally grow up? I mean, why, what is it that is in that part, being a man, that you see that young boys aren't getting? I mean, it's just fascinating.
Yes. What young boys don't get from the beginning is that they are more relational beings. And as girls get that very early, mm-hmm. they learn that they're connected to their families. They're playing their play. If you watch girls play from a very young age, their play is very social and connected, and it values others. Boys play, interesting, and it may be societal, and it may be a little bit of hormonal, too, which we've studied, but boys' play seems to still be a little more aggressive, a little more hierarchical, if we could say. It kind of sets
yes.
up little,
mm-hmm.
you know, competitions. And then the boys' sports and the way boys' kind of culture continues that type of being, which would create boys that are a little less literate in terms of relationships, a little more into competition, a little more selfish, a little more involved in the self. And you notice how girls even begin to value giving and taking care of each other at a
mm-hmm.
younger age. Boys aren't taught that. So by the time they're teenagers, they're competitive, they're a little more self-centered, they're instrumental, which means they're used to taking care of things as father does. They take care of things, but they don't take care of relationships. So
mm-hmm.
that's why we often get that gap. I get it as a therapist. I see a gap between even teenage girls and boys, and then it gets wider.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll get marriages in which I'm doing a lot of couples counseling, and there's a tremendous gap between the knowledge and the intuition and the understanding that the wife has about relationships and its needs and what the husband has.
Mm-hmm.
So that gap is unfortunate because it creates so much of the problems that we see around divorce and separation. It's almost like, I would say, when men and women come in, it's what I call not a level playing field, if you know what I mean. The men are just not as knowledgeable about what it takes to keep a relationship intact.
Sometimes I think there is such a false promotion of what I feel is almost medieval attitudes about the role of the male. When you look back into certain cultures, they would train the boys to take, I'm thinking of something material I just came across. It was like in the Sudan.
Mm-hmm.
Boys are taught that they always go out in front of the women because there were wild animals and other things. It was
mm-hmm.
their job to protect the women and the children. The women didn't have weapons. They often were carrying their children wherever they were traveling to. So the men were the ones that had the weapons, and they would go out, and this is what they were to do. But they had to earn their position of responsibility. It just wasn't handed to them. They had to understand certain roles. And I think so often it's very difficult for women to do that with boys. Now, I've known a few women that have done a wonderful job in that respect. But the way women think and the way men think, it's just like night and day. And men on so many levels. And it's not good or bad. It's just they think differently. But the male really needs to have a good role model. And it's a tough thing if you have a dad that doesn't have a clue. And then, like you said just a moment ago, carrying anger and patterns from the past. I mean, we all do it. I mean, as soon as we say, I'm not going to be like mom or I'm not going to be like dad, usually that's the first thing we do.
Mm-hmm.
Without
yes.
Because it's just wired in there. We just are
mm-hmm.
copycats. So until we become mindfully present like you did and say, wait a minute, where is this really coming from? And asking a question, then we can't possibly change it because we're on automatic. So your book addresses so much of this. And you talk about Joseph and Ken. Ken, as a 14-year-old, he had returned to living with his dad. Let's talk about that scenario and how you were able to work through that.
Yes, you're talking about the scenario in which the young boy is in a power struggle with his father and the father
yes.
of the son.
That's
yes, you
right.
know what's so unfortunate about that is that that women sometimes are able to, and mothers, to avoid that. But men, because they are competitive and because they've been trained to not like it when they're challenged in their authority, they're much more prone with adolescents, with their sons, to get stuck in a pattern in which they're going to show the son that the son cannot override them. But, of course, with teenage boys who are programmed biologically to rebel,
right.
They're going to challenge, they have to challenge from a generational perspective, they have to challenge dad in some way. And if dad is too much of an authoritarian, is too much of a military type, it's a setup for a real problem to emerge in which it's what I call the bad deal between father and son. The more dad tries to put more draconian measures in place to kind of keep the son from rebelling, the more the son needs to rebel. The more the son rebels, the more the father puts more and more tighter restrictions. And so you've got a pressure cooker going. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, those patterns are very hard to get out of. It's only the adults, the father, and hopefully if there's other intervening adults, who can pull out of that and provide some relief. Because we all get stuck in patterns like that, but the father-son rebellion restrictive pattern is just one of the most painful to watch.
It is painful to watch, but I agree with you. It's as normal as breathing.
Mm-hmm.
Because that young man, like you said, biologically is programmed. He is supposed to go out. He is supposed to find his own partner, his own place in the world. He's a new generation. And if dad fights, I have seen this happen so many times. In fact, I'm thinking right now of a gentleman that I know of, very mature person, very caring man, but he almost killed his father when he was 16 years old because his father, who was, you know, like 70-some-odd years old, he had had him very, very late in life. This was a huge family. The mother had had like 10 kids, something like this, over a 20-year period. So, and she had gotten married to a man that was in his 40s. So by the time all of this evolved, and here he is 16 years old, he's got a father who's 70 years old, who really, physically, can't even come close to the strength of his 16-year-old son, and tries to intimidate his son by threatening to hit him in the head with a trophy. Now, I know members of my audience are going to listen to this, and they're going to say, you've got to be kidding. This sounds like something in a movie. But it happens. And dad's ego is out there, and by God, he's going to be that. He's going to be the head of the household. And this 16-year-old literally, instead of punching his father out, and if he, at 70, the guy was nowhere near, I mean, he could have killed him. And he said he realized something came into his head and said, you could kill your father. You are so angry. You're in a situation. Instead, he picked his dad up and threw him across the room.
Hmm.
And his father just was demoralized after that.
Yes.
And that's a sad thing. Now, when, now here we've got a 16-year-old and a 70-year-old father. Now, hopefully most fathers aren't going to be of that age with that kind of a scenario. But it's a very dramatic, it's sort of an extreme situation. But this father had done it with every one of his sons.
Yes. You know, it's interesting you say that because in my own family history with my own father, he actually had me later in life. He was 44. When I was born. So you're talking about something very similar. So when I was a teenager, he was well into his 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the similar things happened because he also had a legacy of anger, and because he had passed that on to me, the same situation was there. He had taught me how to be an angry and at times even violent young man. So when he got older, and since might make right in the home in this type of patriarchal kind of situation, I realized when I was 16 to 17 that I was bigger and stronger than he was. So whenever you're living in a kind of a patriarchal and violent or violence-prone culture, which was the male culture in my family, it's dangerous for the older males. They just have set themselves up to be in a dangerous position because they can no longer rule by physical force.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I actually witnessed that and was actually frightened of my own anger because I realized, my God, I'm so much stronger than he. I actually could hurt him. And so I kind of withdrew more from him, and we kind of withdrew from each other, unfortunately.
Right, and that's what happened with this gentleman. That's what happened with him. In fact, he just looked at him and he said, "Don't you ever do that to me again.
Yes.
Don't you ever threaten me like that again." And he said, "You're an old man." And that, you know, it was very, obviously very demeaning to the father. But yet the father had brought it upon himself, just as you said, like in your similar situation. Well, there's a lot of men that sincerely want to know how they can be a better father. There are men, in my mind, I remember this one client, and his name was Kevin. He was one of the kindest, most thoughtful human beings I've ever had cross my path. And he literally died from a heart that burst. He was under so much stress. He was an extremely fine father. But emotionally, this man was a wreck. He was what I would say is the guy trying to be the super dad. And he left two, you know, young children, 8 or 9 years of age, whom he loved with every ounce of his being and was just so responsible for. And he had set the bar so high for himself. He had had a very, very bad marriage. You know, I look at situations like this where men don't feel like they can talk. And you brought up an excellent point about how girls are encouraged to be social. How can we give men that sense of ease and comfort with being men, that they don't have to know it all, they don't have to be this superman of supermen, and that being caring and compassionate, that they don't have to dominate? We've got so much of that throughout the world.
Yes, it's so hard to change that, and I realize what has changed, fatherhood has changed. Men have become better fathers that I've noticed in the last 10 to 15 years. What hasn't changed as much, unfortunately, Donna, is the male culture overall, in which men are just, they're not taught from an early enough age to what I would call emotional literacy, if I can use that word. They'd have to be value, and the family would have to be a part of it, along with the other institutions like the religious institutions and the schools, to kind of bring together a male literacy around emotions, because men have a very limited vocabulary, actually, when you go actually into vocabulary, around their feelings. When I work with men, you know, men might be in their 30s or 40s and they're having very difficult marriages, their language, their descriptions of their own feelings is very, very limited. Matter of fact, one of the few emotions that they can say is that they're mad. They're angry. They're tired. Sometimes they'll say they're horny. These are like the three emotions that I sometimes get from men. And I realize when I talk to women, their language about emotion is much more varied and much richer. So when a woman can even describe disappointment and hurt and different levels and nuances of pain, which men's culture doesn't even allow men to still express. That is when men are not supposed to show that they're in pain. And I know that from being a boy who grew up in the 1950s, and I know how I was not expected to express my pain. I was expected to hold it in, kind of the John Wayne prototype, that American cowboy image. So if men are both not voiced or don't have the language to express it, and are even told that they're not supposed to be weak or wimps around it, you got a double kind of whammy around men being expressive and being emotional. And so they're kind of walled in, I can use that word, emotionally. And it just prevents a lot happening in relationship to others. So it's not valued, they're kind of repressed emotionally, and they don't have the language. So there's a number of disadvantages that men have. Now, how to change that is a tremendous cultural and societal task. It's bigger than any one factor. It's just a big societal change that I don't think, unfortunately, has significantly changed in the last 10 or 15, although there's been men's movements and some movements around fatherhood. The core emotional being of men and young men that I see today even hasn't changed that significantly, unfortunately.
Well, I know there's such an issue, and among certain ethnic groups, I've seen this, and I've had long discussions with people, but it's almost as if there has been an encouragement for a lack of responsibility among the males. It's like, well, this is what's expected. And I think that's so sad, because if a man has a good sense of balance within himself, and he understands what the role of fatherhood is, and that is to sort of be that guidance and being a good example to his children and enabling them to grow, just like a good mother should be. But nobody's perfect. Everybody's going to make mistakes as they go along the road of experience in life. No one's exempt from that. But there is this promotion and concept, for example, that I'm seeing on television that really, really gets me. And it is the dumbing down of the male. Now, what I don't like is when dads are portrayed as being total jerks. They can't think their way out of a paper bag. When there's demeaning conversation, and all of this is being promoted, and you have children watching this. You have girls watching it and say, oh, they're all a bunch of jerks. You have this mentality that's promoted. What can we do to turn this around? The women can do it so far, but what can the guys do to turn this around?
Well, I think the unfortunate thing is that there isn't as much of a male consciousness raising thing as there has been when there was a healthy women's movement in the 60s and 70s. I felt there was a cultural change that went on, for better and for worse at times. There were things that were wrong about the women's movement and abrasive about it, but there were also things that changed consciousness. Now, I'm not sure how we can do that, because you're right, the TV, even from the earliest, and some of the other media, portrays men as bumpkins almost. Like, I mean,
men,
I can go back to the early cartoons of Dagwood, the father who was so inept. Some of the early men, like Father Knows Best, they were kind of, as you said, idealized fathers, but
right.
They weren't real either. And then we get to even Bill Cosby, who was a model, upper-middle-class African-American father, who was very kind and gentle and thoughtful. But, you know, if you watch those shows very closely, he still was a little bit of a, you know, he was still tiptoeing around his wife in a way that made him look a little bit foolish. And I think it's hard to get a male character that's both strong and emotionally connected. It's hard to find those characters in our movies or in our media, and yet we need them. I don't know what the answer is for how do we create that, because I think it's a cultural change that has to both portray men as sensitive, intelligent beings who can stay connected to people and they value their relationships to others. That's a big, big change, because when I talk to men, even the soldiers that I talk to who went overseas, even recently in the Gulf Wars, somehow they were mostly concerned when they went overseas that they wouldn't be able to do the jobs that they did, like mowing the lawn. They still saw their importance through task rather than relationship. It was rather than the people that they were leaving and how they would stay connected to their children, which was important to them. But they were most concerned, because men are taught to be instrumental, that they wouldn't be able to take care of the checking account or take care of the lawn. And that's the way men still think. They think in terms of task and not in terms of relationship, generally.
Well, I think your book, More Coaching for Fatherhood, is a wonderful, wonderful gift. And I would say, gals, if you have any male members of your family that you feel need to have an upgrade and understanding, read the book first yourself. Get a perspective from a man's view. And then give it to your guys. Maybe if you have a young man that's a teenager that's, you know, you're going to say one day you're going to have a family, I want you to read this book and let's talk about it. And I think it's a great book for a family to talk about. But more than anything else, I think it gives the male an opportunity to realize he doesn't have to be alone. This is not something where it means he's weak. He's got an opportunity to have a connection with his children that is going to be absolutely awesome, and one that he can enjoy, not just with his kids, but with himself. And I think that's the biggest key. It boils down to what you as an individual can do for yourself, because you can't really give it to anybody else if you can't give it to yourself first. What is your website, Lou, that you have?
Well, I don't have an actual website right now, but people can, if they want to order the book, I know they can go to New Horizons Press, which is where they can get the book from.
Okay.
And they certainly can, they can write me or connect with me if they want on my, just in my email.
And what is that?
It's L-E-W Epstein, Lou Epstein, 24, at gmail.com.
Lou Epstein, that's L-E-W-E-P-S-T-E-I-N, and what's the rest of it?
24, at gmail.com.
At gmail.com. This is a very special book, because written by a man who deals with couples, with men that are having issues. If you have someone that's been in the military, if you have anyone that you think could become empowered by this, if it's someone in prison, wonderful chapter on this, a good read. And like I said, gals, don't be afraid to read it yourself. It'll give you a perspective that maybe you've never had, and it'll empower you with an understanding that you need. And guys, it is anything but demeaning of males. It's just very different from that. Lewis, I want to thank you so much for being my guest today, and I compliment you on revising your book. I think you've done a very good job with it.
Donna, thank you so much for having me on the air and for also publicizing this very important topic.
My pleasure. This is Donna Sebo. Don't forget to, if you want to email him, you can email him at lewepstein24@gmail.com. Also go to New Horizons Press if you would like to order the book or get it through Amazon or go to your local bookstore. This is Donna Sebo. We are taking a break, and we're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open, and if you'd like to chat with me, the number to call is 888-815-8255. 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Now, by the way, I do want to let you know about some upcoming broadcasts. On June the 20th, on Sunday, I'm going to be on with Susan and Bert on Bipolar Nation Radio. Now, you can, this is at 11 a.m., this is a Sunday, and if you're interested, this is going to be live, and you can hear it on Bipolar Nation Radio on Facebook or latalkradio.com. Callers will be welcome to participate in the broadcast. 323-203-0815 is that number to call in to. And then on June 27th, I'll be having a nice chat with Denise Barnes, who is the host of the talk show Differences. It comes on at 3:30 Pacific time, 5:30 Central. This is going to be at WVOL1470.com. You can listen to it on the Internet. Or if you're in the state of Tennessee, this is the station that Oprah Winfrey started her career on in the Nashville area. So I'm very pleased to be able to be on air with Denise. We do have some other programs that will be coming up, and as I am given the time frames and exact dates, I'll be passing them along to you. And let's see, there's something else. Oh, I am, for those of you in the state of Washington, starting as of July the 1st, there will be free passes that I'll be giving away on the show, and this is for the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Festival. This is an awesome event. I've been so pleased to be a part of it for close to 10 years now, and it is a wonderful event. So that information is going to be forthcoming starting July the 1st, but I have free passes that I'm going to be giving away on the show. So just know that that's going to be coming up. So if that is something that you really, really like, then you have a chance to take you and your family to that. So also, don't forget, during this next half hour, you're welcome to give me a call at 888-815-9756. Now, tomorrow we're going to be talking about the menopause thyroid solution, and we're going to be talking with Mary Shoman. For you gals, this is absolutely phenomenal information. I was in a meeting this afternoon with someone who is a very mature lady, and she discovered many years ago that she had a thyroid problem, and she has had to take medication, and as it has been determined, not only when she found out about it did she encourage her children to have checkups on this, but do you know that two of her daughters and one of her sons developed thyroid problems? So there is a genetic patterning here that could be passed along, and I have a very dear friend who found out, and her mother is up there in years, she's in her 70s, and her mother was just recently diagnosed with a thyroid problem. We are discovering things we didn't have a clue about. So there is so much going on, and I'm so delighted that I'm able to bring people here to the show that can share this knowledge with us. Also, we're going to be talking on Wednesday with Jerzy Gregorek and his wonderful wife, The Happy Body. What a publication this is. Holy Joseph, these people really know their stuff. They're medalists. They've just, being physically fit is a part of their life, so we're going to have them on Wednesday. And then William Powers on Thursday is going to be my guest. His title of his book is 12 by 12. This man lived in a room that was exactly 12 by 12. Fascinating story, wonderful experience, and then Mary Barton is going to be with us on Friday. Soul Sight is the title of her publication. She's a psychic, and she shares her stories with how you can develop your own abilities, etc. So we've got a great lineup this week. I hope you'll be able to join us. But if you want to chat with me, also know the line is open, 888-815-9756. Okay, I wanted to share some information with you. One is that glasses, if you're like me and you wear glasses, every time you have to go into the eye doctor, you're sort of cringe. At least I do. It just seems like there's such a process just to get the glasses. Well, guess what? Somebody else has come up with a concept. We live in a phenomenal technological period. Do you know there are now glasses that are more affordable? Typically, when I go in to get glasses, every time I do it, If there's new frames that are needed, because lots of times the frames are not made all that strong, they're made of a plastic and such that deteriorate, well, it'll be $300, $400, $500, depending on the types of lenses that you have. Well, now things have changed, and it said that Netflix meets optometry. Now, you can go to a particular website, WarByParker, WarByParker.com, and they will display 5 frames. Now, these aren't going to be glamorous movie star frames. They're not going to be the high-end frames. You can pick them. Pick what you want of the 5, try them on, pick a pair, and return them. There's no charge at any time. And you get your prescription, and you can get a pair of these frames for $95. That is amazing. Because a lot of these frames cost you a few hundred dollars, right? Right. So what this company does also is for every pair that it sells, it donates a pair to a group that needs them. Absolutely amazing stuff. Also, what I wanted to say to you is, if you're like me when you travel, the last thing that you really want to do when you get to the airport is to have to take your shoes off. This has been an irritant ever since they've implemented this security stuff at the airport. Well, it is really a problem. People that have even more of a problem is if they've got to wear special types of shoes, if someone's handicapped. I mean, there's just a lot of problems. You got to put them in the bucket and all this kind of stuff. Well, do you know there's a lot of competition out there? They're trying to develop airport shoe scanners. So all you have to do is just walk across something, and they would be able to detect it. Now, apparently, there have been a number of these that have been designed, but they failed to meet the Transportation Security Administration standards. However, the TSA says that it may buy up to 100 of these new machines by next year. I swear, now there was an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, and it had the deal to do, I think, with the planet Mars. Recall, that's the name of the movie, where he walks through a scanner, and this was such a sensation because they showed this full body scanner, and what you saw was the skeleton on the screen, and he had a gun on, and they were able to see the gun. Boy, was that a precursor to what we're going to be having. But those scanners they've come out with just hit people with so much radiation, they've got to really shift that dramatically because it can be harmful. So anyway, we're coming up to that one also, but that was in the movie Recall with Schwarzenegger. Here we've got a stair stepper to get to that point. So when you eventually will go through, you won't have to do anything. You'll just go, whoop, and they'll put you through, but they're looking for certain things. I'm telling you, some of these sci-fi people, they really are right on the mark. They see it a long time before it happens, and then lo and behold, 10 or 15 years later, it pops up, and there it is. And in today's world, it's popping up a lot more rapidly than what we could have ever dreamed. Why? Because we've got so many phenomenally talented people that say, let's do this or let's do that, or really, why can't we do it? What else can be developed? I don't know how anybody can keep up with all of these phenomenal changes. They're just absolutely amazing to me. This is Donna Sebo, 888-815-9756. If you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, give me a buzz. Telephone lines are open. Meanwhile, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, I have some special stories to share with you, some vacation trips when you're taking one of your furry friends with you, and a little bit of this and a little bit of that. I hope you'll stay with me. We'll be right back.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. Okay, vacation time is just around the corner. Isn't it exciting? You're going to pack up the family, maybe go down the coast somewhere or visit, you know, someplace in the United States, or maybe travel overseas. But if you're going to be traveling in the United States, a lot of people love to take their pets. Well, in today's world, we are fortunate because we have air-conditioned vehicles, but there are things that we really need to pay attention to. One is your dog's physical fitness. Is your dog really fit to travel? Sometimes we have older animals, and unless you're in a position where you can have them in an RV that the air conditioning can stay on the whole time while maybe you're gone, you need to really be aware of these things. So if you do not have an animal that would not travel well, if your vet would say, gee whiz, it's not such a good idea, you're going to have this problem, that problem, the other problem, pay attention. Do the animal a favor. Find a good place for them to stay so you can go and have your vacation and have a wonderful time. Also, for the animal's safety, you should have a crate or a harness that they wear while you're driving. And be sure you take the time to make pit stops. Your animal will dehydrate. They need water. We used to, when we traveled with our Scotties, would get these water bowls that had a lip on it, and I'd fill the water bowl with ice. And my dogs, all of my Scotties, have just loved ice water. And so when I'd put the ice cubes in there with a little bit of water, that water would stay nice and cold. And, of course, the cars were air-conditioned, so they were pretty comfortable. But some of my dogs just were tremendous drinkers of water, and they're just going to have to get out and go at the rest stop. So you need to be aware of that. You need to remember that also when you're driving in a car, I don't care if it's white, I don't care if it's black, it's going to get very, very hot. And you want to be aware of the fact that if you're going to be doing a long, long journey in a vehicle, you need to be thoughtful about where you stop so that, one, you can walk and exercise your animal and make sure that they have something to eat or drink if that's required. But also you have to be aware that you don't want your animal susceptible to being stolen. I've known people whose dogs were stolen when they were traveling or even in a parking lot somewhere. So just be savvy here. It's like having a child with you. And you just need to pay attention. Just don't assume things. And those cars and trucks can get so very, very warm. So you need to be wise. Also, if you're going to fly, you want to be sure that you have, if possible, a direct nonstop flight because it's easier on you as well as your animals. They're going to be much more comfortable. And when the temperatures are cooler, that's usually the better time to travel with pets, not in the middle of summer where it's going to be 120 degrees outside. Because their pads can get burned if they are out on concrete and things like this. These are things you need to think of. Also, you want to, when you make your stops, plan ahead. Pick a pet-friendly hotel and make sure you take along the bedding of your animal. It will make all the difference in the world. Something we often did is we'd have sweatshirts, things that we wore that we would always have with us. And it just seemed to give our dogs a sense of, gee whiz, I'm with my family. It's that scent. And it really made a difference. We would do that whenever we'd leave them, whether we were leaving them in a vehicle or even when we'd leave them at home. We found that that just gave them a sense of security. And as they became older, it wasn't so important. But it really does make a difference. And keep the routine of feeding times. It really is necessary. And you know what? You want to be sure that you have adequate amounts of the food that you want them to have. Because some animals will, like people, get very upset when they travel on the road. They have digestive disorders, and I don't think it's too much fun when you have a dog throwing up in your car. It's just about as exciting as a drunk in the back seat throwing up. So it's not a good thing, and you want to be sure that you have a good time when you're traveling with your animals. And I would just say, plan your time. Plan your time. Give yourself plenty of driving time so you can enjoy the trip and enjoy the journey with your animals. Speaking of animals, I have in front of me, and I've gotten emails on this, and I just think it's amazing. It's about a dog called Giant George, and maybe you've heard about him. He's 4 years old. He's a Great Dane, and he lives in Tucson, Arizona with his family. And what's so special about this dog? Well, he is considered the biggest dog, the tallest dog living and the tallest dog ever. And when I saw the photos, and I've got this one in front of me, the owner next to this dog looks like a peanut. This dog is like as big, almost as big as a horse. The owner gets teased, and you need to get a saddle for this dog. He's so big. His height is 43 inches from paw to shoulder. He's 7 feet 3 inches long from nose to tail. His weight is enough to blow your mind. He's 245 pounds. That is a humongous dog. When he was a puppy, no one had a clue that he was going to get this big. No one had a clue. And his owner's name is Dave Nasser. And he said, he's so cute in his little crate. When we picked him up, he said, now he sort of looks like a pony when he's running. They feed him 110 pounds of dry food a month that has to be in a dish that's 20 inches off the ground. Now, where do you think this dog sleeps? Oh, I know. It's sort of like the gorilla, wherever he wants to. Well, actually, they got him a queen-size mattress. Yeah, standard queen-size mattress, and that's what he sleeps on. He's that big. I mean, he's as long as some of our basketball players are tall. I mean, from nose to tail. And he goes around the neighborhood in a golf cart. And he said he likes it so much. David, his owner, says, he just loves his golf cart. He doesn't want to get up. He loves to go for a ride. Well, my goodness, he's a big guy. And, of course, he wins at any kind of tug-of-war that ever's done. And there is a social networking site on Giant George that there are more than 42,000 fans that he's got. And he's on Facebook. See, look him up. He is the tallest dog living, the tallest dog ever. You wonder what genetic throwback created this, and he's healthy. He's just a wonderful, wonderful dog. I just had to share that with you. It's incredible. Oh, now, by the way, I want to remind you that if you want to have any of the information on upcoming shows that I've got for this month, go ahead and log on to my website, DelphiInternational.com, and you want to be sure to go over to the newsletter section, because the newsletter section has this stuff itemized out. In fact, if you'd like to get a free newsletter, all you have to do is send me an email, donna@delphiinternational.com. I'll be glad to put you on my email list, and you'll get a free one every month. Also, for those of you that have had paranormal experiences, I am so enjoying the stories that you're sending me. I'm putting together a book, as you know. I'm collecting 100 stories, and I'd love to have yours, whether it's a ghost story, story about near-death experience, whether it is about telepathy, precognitant dreams, I don't care. I'd love to hear your story because it may end up in the book. So do send it. I'm giving myself a year to collect all of these stories, and I'm looking forward to receiving yours. So send it to Donna@DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna@DelphiInternational.com. www.fatherstayinternational.com. I would be delighted to receive it. Well, my goodness, I know that we're almost out of time. Don't forget, tomorrow we're going to be talking about the menopause thyroid solution, and I think you'll find Mary Shulman a very interesting lady. And remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. There's no one else like you in the world. You are a unique cell in this universal body of life. And your talents and everything about you is special. You're here for a reason. And I would hope that you would take the time to investigate your strengths and realize that what you're able to contribute to this life maybe won't land you in the front of People magazine, but you may influence people in such a way and manner that you can be an example. And for all of you guys out there that are fathers, don't ever think that you don't matter. You do. How you think, how you act, how you create the environment for those that you love really does make a difference. So don't be afraid to explore yourself. And More Coaching for Fatherhood, I think, is a wonderful book to add to your library. This is Donna Siebel. We'll be back here tomorrow, same time, same place. Have a magnificent day. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.